This is the last Hangouts on Air for us, and for most people, really, because Google is killing this Google Plus legacy feature starting August 1st.
Is it really a Google Plus feature?
Yeah, Hangouts. Hangouts is Google Plus. What was the thing before Hangouts and Google Plus? Huddle, I think it was called. Google Huddle. Does anybody remember that?
No.
I do not remember that.
Because they had a Google Plus specific messaging solution, and I think it was called Huddle. Then when the Hangouts thing happened, they integrated it. So it's another deep dive into Google's failed messaging ambitions.
This seems more like a YouTube feature than a Google Plus feature, but I guess that's just me.
Yeah. After they started winding down Google Plus, they moved it to, they made it a YouTube feature properly. But I assume the reason they're killing it is because it's a legacy Hangouts feature at the underlying level. So, we're going to miss it. We still have to find another solution, but next week we will have a show, and we don't know how we're doing it yet, but rest assured we'll have a show.
It's Stephen's problem, not ours.
I wasn't going to say that, okay. But to start off this show, Pixel 4, wow, this was a very big month. Was it a Monday? Did this all happen on a Monday? When Google made an unprecedented teaser.
Again.
It's more than a teaser. It's a video. It's a full featured...
It's a commercial.
Yeah, it's a commercial. It's like, they could very well reuse this commercial when the actual Pixel 4 launches. But in it, they detailed that, yes, the Pixel 4 that Steven exclusively reported about will have Soli features. It will have the Soli radar sensor made by ATAP, and that Google is primarily using it for face unlock and motion sense. So to dive into the Soli sensor, it will be right next to the audio grill, headphone grill. Will be the Soli sensor. This is where you place your hand to do the gestures. But next to that, there'll be a dot projector, unlock IR camera, and a flood illuminator, which is standard components also used by the iPhone X to do face unlock. There's actually two face unlock IR cameras on either side of the phone. And rounding out is a front-facing camera and an ambient light / proximity sensor. So I guess we should quickly dive into the fact that it only has one front-facing camera. Google they weren't able to fit two. And by the looks of it, this isn't wide angle.
Yeah, I mean, it could be. There were some people suggesting that maybe Google would put only a wide angle on it and then crop it down software-wise to make it look like a normal photo, but I don't see that happening necessarily.
Yeah, because the Pixel 3, the ability to do wide-angle selfies really spoke to, the youth generation. Snapchat culture, whatever. It really spoke to people. Selfies with your friends. And I guess this kind of, if Google doesn't do that software trick to get it's kind of Google backing away. It's another time when Google is backing away from a major feature they introduced on their last phone and then removing it on the next one. The headphone jack between the original Pixel and the Pixel 2 speaks to that. So how do you feel about Google not really having a constant hardware story? Yeah.
It's pretty annoying. I feel like they could fit one, but I really like the solution of having just a wide angle and then cropping in, because you get the best of both worlds. It's kind of like OnePlus, how they do their telephoto lens, because they do it's a bigger sensor, and then they crop it in to get more zoom. I think it'd be a good solution, and they'd be able to fix the distortion issues pretty easily in software.
Yeah, that's true. I rarely use the selfies, this the wide angle selfie feature, because of distortion. It's so noticeable. I don't. Is there a way around that?
Not really, but honestly, I'm on the completely other camp. I don't use the selfie camera much either, but I can say I've used the wide angle on the Pixel 3 more than I have used the selfie camera on any other phone. Just because, one, if I'm out with people and they want to take a big picture, I just say, oh, here, use mine. It can get it more. And it's just, I feel like sometimes it gets a better picture. It's a little more flattering somehow.
Yeah, no, I can totally see that.
I can agree with that, because most of the time when I'm trying to take a selfie, it's not just I'm not trying to take a picture of myself. I'm trying to take a picture of maybe who I'm with or where I'm at. So having that wide angle gets more people or more background in than a standard one ever really could. So
this is somewhat of an odd question, but do you still use the rear camera to take selfies?
No.
I don't know why I still do that, but maybe because, yeah, I really don't know why, but I still do that. More times than not, I just flip it around and use the power button to take a picture for the shutter.
But it's so hard to not get your arm in it.
Yeah, that's fair. That's very true. But I never adapted to the fact that all of our phones have pretty good selfie cameras now.
Fair enough.
But on to the main topic. Face unlock finally is happening on the Pixel device. Real proper face unlock. And frankly, it's the first real secure face unlock from the entire Android landscape.
No.
No?
Huawei Mate 30, if I remember correctly. Mate 20. The Mate 20 Pro has I think it's fewer sensors than this, but it's got the dot projector and all that stuff. And LG on the G8, kind of. It's just reliant on a lot less sensors. It's basically a camera and I think it's an IR sensor. It uses just those two, but it's definitely more secure than most other Android.
I don't know. I think the whole point that makes this so good is that it has two IR sensors, which means it has two distinct views and makes sure that you're putting a 3D image in front of it, not a 2D image.
Yeah, that's true. That's probably the biggest reason why I included the second one, to get as big a view as possible.
It's also more than the iPhone has.
Yeah.
And the iPhone only has one IR sensor.
And the iPhone notoriously has issues unlocking your face when you're, say, laying in bed or not in the perfect angle. So this is a real distinguishing feature, which Google did make a deal of pointing out, saying how they engineered face unlock differently. They took a clear knock at the iPhone, quote, "Other phones require you to lift the device all the way up, pose in a certain way, wait for it to unlock, and swipe to get to the home screen. Pixel 4 does all of that in a much streamlined way." So they're definitely driving at how they're doing it better. Took them a while, but at the same time, it's probably worth it given the investment they're doing here.
Mm-hmm. Do you think they could have done the face unlock the way that they're doing it without Soli? Because I feel like they're tied together. Like your Soli is like predicting that you're coming up and turning on the face unlock to see you. It's like proactive in a way.
I mean, they could have done it the same way Apple does.
Yeah, I guess I don't. How does it work? I've never even like.
You pick up the phone, and when it senses that it's been picked up using, I think probably the accelerometer, it turns on the screen and turns on the face unlock.
Fair enough.
Which in Android Q, it does that already. If you pick up your Pixel on Android Q, it turns on the screen.
Yikes!
Yeah.
So it does.
So I don't think Soli is necessary for it. It probably just helps, especially if it's sitting on a table.
All of our listeners on Android Q now just picked up their phones.
I guess what I'm curious about the actual implementation is what happens if you're like a chronic, like you bring up your phone to see the active, the AOD. What happens if you like you're just picking up the phone casually?
That's the thing. You can't do that anymore. On Android Q, you can't pick up the phone and just look at the always-on display.
Oh, that's going to be a real bummer.
You never noticed that, did you?
No, I've never noticed that.
I noticed that on the last beta because I was looking for changes, but that's been since beta 3, I think.
Mm. Yeah, I guess we can talk about this at the beta, but I'm still, my daily driver, the Pixel 3, is still on Pi.
Mm.
Did you end up moving, Ben, to the...
Yes, I did. My Pixel 3 XL is currently sitting on Q.
Mm.
Same, yeah.
Bold people. So, that's face unlock. Hopefully, it's good. It's as good as it's as promised by Google here. Face unlock works in almost any orientation they tell. Holding it down, upside down. So yeah, that should be. It seems like such a minor implementation detail, but I think this will really help it proliferate.
My question is it going to work at any angle, like if you're holding the phone pointing at you, or if it's flat on the table? Like, is it still going to work that way? That's my question.
Mm-hmm.
How is the field of view, how is that going to
I guess scale? That is kind of why they want you to like look at the phone. Like, didn't they say they wanted you to like look at the phone from multiple angles? Like, wasn't that something I heard from the
face people match getting paid?
Yeah,
and also the face match process for the Nest Hub Max, which we know about definitely.
Do you think that registering for one is going to work like voice match and carry across devices? Like, they'll have a model of our face, like they have a model of our voice.
I
know it won't because I think I saw something about the face data is stored only on the phone.
Yeah,
that would be nice.
Just like your fingerprint is with the fingerprint sensor.
And they're probably looking for different things, like the face.
Mm-hmm.
Presumably, even if it did transfer, I don't think face match from your Nest Hub Max would have enough data to take it to your Pixel 4. But at the same time, it's going to be kind of annoying that it doesn't do that.
Right.
Having users set up two different face match experiences.
I mean, it could copy from one device to another without being stored in the cloud necessarily. But yeah, that's a little complicated, though.
I would think the only way it could do it is going from Pixel to Nest Hub.
Yeah, not vice versa. Nest Hub,
it can't bring it over. Because also, I think, wouldn't the Nest Hub be looking for a smaller face sometimes, too? Because you'd be far away from it.
That definitely has a wide angle.
That's true. Because the models are going to be completely different because they're two completely different kinds of camera. I mean, yes, they're both made by Sony, but that's the extent of the similarities.
Yeah. Actually, what do you think it's going to be called? Is it going to be called Face Match per Google Assistant?
I think that's a good enough name.
Yeah.
But that definitely implies that it's a similar experience.
Pixel Match? I don't know.
Pixel Present.
No, Pixel Presence doesn't sound like your face at all. I think that's something else.
Yeah. I'm thinking like Pixel Imprint because that's what they call it with the fingerprint.
Hmm.
I would assume they'd probably call it something Pixel, if not Face Match.
Yeah, I think Pixel does have a better branding opportunity. But moving on to the part two of this is Motion Sense, which is what Google is calling features powered by Soli, Project Soli. At a high level, it detects small motions around the phone and you can use it to, at the moment, what Google has definitely said will be available at launch is to skip songs, to snooze alarms, and silence your phone by waving your hand. I'm, at this very moment, would use only the first one, probably, to skip songs.
I'm trying to imagine silencing an alarm. Like, I'm picturing myself at 6:30 in the morning, yeah, and my alarm goes off.
You grab whatever is making a noise. You don't casually dismiss it.
Maybe it might make sense on a Pixel stand. Like, if you have a Pixel stand on your nightstand and you just kind of at it, maybe it would dismiss at that point.
Yeah, just...
I mean, I guess it depends on also how far the range is.
Yeah.
I mean, the Nest Hub Max, which does not have I don't know what the range is of a Soli sensor like that.
I can't imagine it's very much.
No. Not the low power levels they're trying to reach.
And definitely it has to dismiss false positives in any way it can. And range is the biggest one to do that.
I could see it being useful for the silencing phone calls part.
Oh, yeah. So if my phone started ringing down here, I could just be like, bye.
Mm-hmm. So do none of you squeeze your phone to silence alarm, to silence phone call? Is that a feature?
No. Yes, it is. I have never actually used that.
That's a thing. The only thing I've used ActiveEdge for is to get assistant.
Yeah, you know, you can snooze an alarm, silence a phone call. There's one other thing it does, but it's not coming to my... Not coming to mind.
I mean, we assume ActiveEdge is going to be there, right? Or not, that's another embarrassing walk.
That would be sad. I ActiveEdge.
Yeah, I think somebody saw something about it being on the Pixel 4. I cannot remember.
That's good.
Yeah, so, ActiveEdge is the number one way that I talk to the assistant right now.
Yeah, especially because of the new gesture navigation. But neither here nor there. Music controls. I definitely see myself using music controls to quickly move around.
It all of the Soli things make more sense when you think about them in context of the Pixel stand. That's the one thing that's really coming to mind, because I can't imagine, like, there's no scenario where the phone is just kind of sitting at perfect eye level, floating in midair like it is in that video.
That's true. Maybe we'll get a new Pixel stand, a better Pixel stand.
Yeah, one a little sturdier. That'd be nice. Yeah,
one that doesn't have proprietary charging.
That's right. And Kyle, you somehow broke yours, right?
Yeah, it's the craziest thing. I had two that worked, and one got a whole bunch of water dumped all over it, and then the other one broke. Not the one that got water on it. The other one. It just would not accept it. It wouldn't transmit a charge. It wouldn't recognize phones. It was just dead.
Okay. When you said more durable, I'm thinking, like, did it crack in half?
Oh my God.
Okay. That makes more sense. I would like one that has better cooling.
Better cooling. Oh yeah. It's hot. It needs a fan. They honestly can't rely on passive.
Yeah, a lot of Samsung's fast chargers have fans. I think they need to do that.
No, that goes completely against Google's branding. That's why there's no Pixelbook with a fan in it. Cooling is not Google's brand.
Yeah.
It needs to be.
It needs to be. So
that Belkin one I have doesn't have cooling either.
Oh, really?
It's just
bulky. Very. Yeah. Well, anyways. But yeah, so three features that will be at launch. I think this gets more promising when developers can do stuff with it.
Agreed.
Do you have any use cases that... What would be a cool feature besides, like, games? I don't know. I think there's a lot... Like, the Soli sensor could open a lot of interaction methods for gaming. And... I don't know, drawing in mid-space, that doesn't really make sense, because you want direct control if you're doing any kind of fine art. But I don't know how developers can really tap into Soli.
I can't think of any third-party ways. One thing that comes to mind but depends on range would be being able to do a hand gesture to take a picture.
Mm.
Like to take a selfie.
Mm, but then, yeah, you would need like a selfie stick at that point.
Not necessarily. Even just being able to hold it, like hold it where the buttons aren't way up at
Yeah.
Going like that.
But then you got these pictures of you always being like...
Well, yeah, but then you have it at
like a timer.
Yeah, it triggers a timer. Again, that depends on the range. I don't think the range is going to be an arm's length and then some.
Yeah.
I feel like it's probably going to be like to your wrist if you're holding the phone.
That limits the possibilities. But yeah, what else could this do? Because this is... I assure you, this isn't a cheap pod, and Google better have reasons why it's there.
It's so hard to think about it, because you need to think about it three-dimensionally, because like everything that we've seen so far of it is something that could theoretically be done with gesture navs, with touch gesture. Like, oh, you swipe the whole phone, you swipe across the screen, you skip track. You swipe the other way, you go back a track. That's something that could theoretically be done with a gesture nav. Mm-hmm. But I just don't know. Like, there's got to be something that can be done in three dimensions that isn't possible with just a flat touch screen.
Volume is a real possibility.
Yes, volume would be nice. I'll tell you who Google shouldn't ask is LG. Because I'm just because it's a similar thing. I'm just looking at the stuff they can do, and one of them is capture a screenshot.
Oh,
and I don't understand
what's a gesture. This basically
is you put your palm like this in front of the phone, and then you pinch and pull.
Oh, pinch and pull. Oh, that's a classic natural thing to do. Mm-hmm. Pinch and pull.
That's smart, actually. You're just like, yes, I want that. I want what's on the screen to get saved. I could see it, but
it's pointless though.
Yeah. Screenshots are so easy to take now. Yeah.
So I guess like when everybody gets it, they'll definitely be using it initially. It'll be a cool thing to do. The fact is on when people keep using it is how accurate it is. If it isn't 100% accurate, people just skip it. And I guess the utility, because people like buttons, people like volume buttons, people with the AOD, it's everything is just a tap away. And sometimes people like direct manipulation versus what you're waving around, and it's not very one-to-one. So I guess the question is how will it be good enough, and will it be useful enough?
I wonder if it could like use, like you could show it a hand gesture, like, or show it like a, have like shortcuts or hotkeys, you know what I mean? Like, oh yeah, I was thinking a different one, but it's just like to have some like, yeah, some like, you know, open the Spider-Man game or whatever, you know, something like that. Have shortcuts that are based on hand gestures.
Yeah, how much is Google willing to open it up? Because, I mean, we've seen with ActiveEdge, Google hasn't really opened it up.
Yeah, I have a feeling it'll be a while before developers can do anything with it.
Yeah, and if they do, again, the big question is if.
That's true.
Yeah, and because the thing is, even now, Google can't use their own features in some places.
Oh, what do you mean by that?
They said that some of the features are going to be...
Yes, country limited. Because Google had to get FCC certification to operate low-level radar in the US. And yeah. I think the government was more concerned about was the FAA and using it in airplanes.
Yeah, right. I'm just curious, like, for one, I'm sure they won't open up to developers until it can be used beyond, like, until there's no restrictions in place in these places.
Have you seen any API indications that they're working on an API for this?
I haven't spotted anything, but I know, like, for one, Dylan would have found something by now because he's like dug through Android Q. And two, if they were going to open this up to developers anytime relatively soon after the launch, we would have heard about it at I/O in a vague sense. They would have said, well, if you were to work with Soli, it would look kind of like this and give developers a way to get hands-on with it. But that just didn't happen.
Conspiracy theory, that's why that Google published a blog post when they did this week, because they're going to start working with developers. Because they do have Soli development kits that aren't tied to the phone. Like they can send you a tiny square sensor on a board.
So there's university that's working with that, isn't there? We saw demonstrations from them.
Yeah. And so there is a way to demo Soli without using a phone. So maybe that's the reason they're starting to do this. But yeah, at the same time, like at the end of the day, when it happens during the announcement, I don't think there'll be any features besides a Google preview.
Yeah, they didn't really give us a teaser for the next thing, did they?
No.
Because for the last teaser, they said, wait till you see what it can do. And now we've seen what it can do. What's next? What's left?
The rear camera, ladies and gentlemen. Mm-hmm. How good will this rear camera be? And everybody's waiting for that. And how it's a sizable sensor. So I was commenting earlier about, so the video Google shared was in a very dark environment and you can barely make out the hump, but it looks much thinner than I thought it would be. I'm not sure if it's just playing with angles here, aggressively playing with angles, but I don't think it's that thick.
I think they're definitely playing with angles because like I think we were talking about earlier in the week is the way the angle of the phone is, you can see the screen, but it's not facing at you. So we're kind of seeing we're seeing the phone if you kind of held it at a slightly off angle, turning it backwards, if that makes any sense at all.
Yeah, it makes sense.
But I'm trying to think of a phone with a big camera bump, but I think any phone with a camera bump, you barely be able to see it if you turned it like this. I think it's probably, I mean, it's at least going to stick out more than the Pixel 3s.
Oh, for sure. For sure. Definitely.
Yeah. So I guess that is the Pixel 4 for now. It's, again, this was, nobody expected this.
Not on a Monday morning.
Not on a Monday morning, not another one, the second. Mm-hmm. Do we think Google is going to demo the camera?
Maybe in the sense that a lot of other companies do, where they put out like of just a picture.
Yeah. Yeah, that'd be one heck of a teaser.
Like OnePlus, when they were doing the 7 Pro, they put out a Twitter post or something where it was regular camera, telephoto camera, and wide angle camera. So maybe Google will just do something like that.
Yeah. But if they want a moment of shock, they still need a moment of shock at the keynote at the end of the day.
I don't know. The Pixel 3 didn't have one, if you think about it.
Night sight.
Oh, yeah. Okay. That's true.
So, yeah, it's... I'm just speaking for ourselves. Pre-writing about this phone will be a cinch going into the event. But at the same time, Google is still presumably hosting a one-hour spectacle announcement. Yes.
Google Assistant next gen.
Yeah.
Technically, we've seen it, and we know it's coming, but...
We've seen a lot of it.
We don't know the interface that it's going to have. We don't know how they're going to be able to use it on the phone.
Yeah.
There's a lot they could put in there.
At I/O, that was our first teaser on this phone.
Technically,
mm-hmm.
So this is. I still think at this point that was probably a Pixel 4 on stage.
Oh, definitely. The thick cases, all that. Everybody was wink, wink, on our next phone.
Can you explain why there were people, why there were Googlers at the same, around the same time complaining that they didn't have a Pixel 4?
Oh yeah. So that's, is there anything else with the Pixel 4 that we haven't discussed yet?
Not in particular.
No Stadia support announced yet.
Oh, yeah.
Confirmed.
Oh, actually, I do have a question. When the image they said of the sensor breakdown, what are they showing on screen?
That's a, that is the album cover of the third song, or whatever the last song is in the promo video.
Okay. Okay, that's a bad explanation.
Wow. Don't ask. I just you had asked me to zoom in really close on the video, and I was like, "Oh yeah, it's the same thing."
That's interesting. That's supposed to be YouTube music, and here I thought it was some kind of like drawing. I don't know.
That was my first instinct too.
Okay, so that's the Pixel 4 again. We are still a while, weeks away from when Google is expected to do the events. But until then, we have some other Made by Google stuff. Kyle, you found benchmarks for Atlas.
Yes. So we got some benchmarks that are tagged for Google Atlas, which having the Google name doesn't necessarily mean anything, but we've been following Atlas for a while and suspect that it's the Pixelbook 2. But unfortunately, when we took a look at these benchmarks, they are right in line with the Pixel Slate, like almost spec for spec, identical.
Mm.
With the exception that while there are two models that we've seen, one with an i5 and an Intel i7, both come with 16 gigabytes of RAM.
16 gigs of RAM.
Which is huge for a Chromebook. Like,
yeah.
90% of people don't need that. 99 even.
Yeah. On the original Chromebook Pixel, they announced an LS ludicrous speed for their 16 gigs i7 model. So there's a history of that being possible.
Is that what the LS stands for?
I don't remember if that was official, but yes.
Okay.
Didn't the, I think the 2015 Chromebook had Pixel had that too.
Pixel
Slate both had 16 gigabytes as well. It's just, it wasn't a standard option.
Yeah, and it's still ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. Yep, 4 years later, still ridiculous. How about that?
I mean, it's only like in the past years it makes sense with the Linux apps, but otherwise, no.
But at the same time, you don't have a high performance processor in there to make use of the 16 gigabytes of RAM. Like, there was discussion online that Android Studio is a selling feature of Chromebooks right now, but it still doesn't make sense on an Intel Y series processor like found in the Pixel Slate and in the Pixel Book and in now Atlas, the Pixel Book 2.
Mm, yeah. So the fact that this is 16, I mean, there's always been 16 gig option, but there was some, I don't know, some speculation that Atlas, the Pixelbook 2, might be cheaper in price, or it might be targeting a different market than the previous Pixelbooks and the Chromebook Pixels before it.
Yeah, that was my hope and my suspicion. Would that be that it would at least be cheaper than the Pixel Slate, just on merit that it's the same hardware spread out? It's not all contained within the screen. You know, it's not the tablet form factor. It's a clamshell. So they have, you know, being able to spread things out should be able to spread out the cost, but that doesn't seem to be that bumping up to the 16 gigabytes doesn't seem to make a case for that anymore.
Yeah. And because if you're paying for 16 gigs, you want one nice body, you want metal, you want all that solid experience.
Which we do seem to have. At least the images that we've seen kind of look like they could be metal. That's I'm hopeful. I mean, looks at least like kind of aluminum, like the Pixel Slate maybe, but that's a rough guess because the image quality is so low.
Yeah, the Pixel Slate. The Pixel Sway always looked plastic to me. It's blue. It never looked
human. It just, yeah, it kind of did. In person, it looks kind of plasticky.
Yeah, so that's...
I don't think anyone would complain if they took the original Pixel Book, made the bezel smaller.
Yeah, that's another big thing. Well, now, if you don't have to spend a year designing a new body, that's another way to cut down costs. But who knows what's happening? This rounded, very familiar design is happening.
Yeah, I mean, I had hope. I had hoped that they would at least reduce the bezels, but from what we've seen, it still looks like it's a little thicker than it should be. But at the same time, it doesn't look that much thicker than what's on the, like, say, the Lenovo C630 Chromebook, which is one of my all-time favorites. Like, yeah, it has a little bit of bezel, but, you know, get over it. It's at least it's not, you know, half an inch thick like the Pixelbook sometimes feels.
Yeah, I'd be totally cool with that.
Yeah, I guess.
Also, side note, I was just looking at that listing. That thing does not come with 16 gigs of RAM in any model, and that's ridiculous.
Which doesn't?
The Yoga.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I agree with you on that. But I think the 4K is what really makes that stand out. I think the only two that have 16 gigs are maybe the HP X1 and the Acer Spin 13. Mm-hmm. I think those are the two.
I only disagree with you because I think the processor is what makes that one stands out, because it's U-Series, so it's basically a desktop chip.
Right, but that, no, it's a standard laptop grade chip. It's it's just like the Spin 13 has that too, but the Spin 13 mm-hmm. does have the 16 gigabytes of RAM, where Lenovo's the only 4K Chromebook on the market right now.
Mm, true.
So, either way, okay. Getting a Pixelbook like that. But if you're paying that much, you would assume that you're getting something more premium. And I don't know if Google with laptop hardware is at that point yet, whether they can go all out or whether they have experience designing a cutting edge larger device. So who knows?
Yeah, I think it just, what we're seeing at the benchmarks, the main point is that it doesn't seem to line up with what they said of productivity on the go.
Productivity on the go.
That was what they had said at Cloud Next, and I don't think that a Y series, even with 16 gigabytes of RAM, I don't think a Y series counts as productivity.
Technically, didn't they kill both of those projects, though?
Say again?
I thought they killed those two projects.
No, I definitely think what productivity on the go was in reference to Atlas and what was going to launch this year. So I still think that's description, that what we should be thinking Atlas as a device is. Unless they have not a Skunksworks project, but I think we've probably heard about it by now.
Yeah. But, I mean, there's so many candidates anyway, but go ahead.
There's so many candidates. But yeah, moving on from hardware, we have Android Auto. And Ben has had time to play with this new car experience, car redesign.
Yep, I've been using it for a little over a week. The rollout started earlier this week, and in typical Google fashion, it's going to be a little while till everyone gets it. But I think overall, it's a pretty good update for most people. I think a lot of people are going to appreciate the darker theme and the quicker access to apps. My only big complaint with it is the loss of the cards, because it takes away a little bit of the convenience and just cleverness of Google's platform. Plus, now it just looks like CarPlay, and I never really liked that in the first place.
Yeah, the assistant, I guess. Cards were such a big deal about how Google is going to deliver a more proactive assistant, dating all the way back to Google Now. I would love to see, like, long-term research reveals about whether people understand suggestions or appreciate suggestions, or if you're in the car environment, you know what you want and you just say it rather than expect it to be there. So I don't know how and how useful those card-based suggestions are for most people in the long term.
That makes a, you make a good point with that, because I could probably count on one hand the amount of times I've gotten into my car and not known exactly where I was going.
Yeah.
I can agree with that. My only exception is if I have it in my calendar or something and it shows up there, it saves me the step of doing it.
Yeah, so I guess the modern equivalent of that now, assistant doesn't do notifications yet. There's no assistant can't send in a notification, can it?
On Android Auto?
Yes, on Android Auto. Like a phone call or message, can it?
Yes, you can get notifications for phone calls and messages, but you can't get it from assistant.
Yeah. That's the only avenue right now to do a card based replacement, isn't
it? Yeah, I think in the interface as it sits right now, they have a dedicated button for notifications, which I think is a very good change because it makes it a lot clearer how to get to that. I think they could pretty easily just put like one always there card for, you know, your calendar locations or your weather and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But in my ideal solution for it would be to take the home screen and instead of having just apps, have the row of most recently used apps at the top, a small card in the middle that's contextual. It could either just show weather by default or show a calendar-based location or a search-based location.
At a glance.
And then, yeah, at a glance. And then your list. If they copied the at-a-glance widget from the Pixel, it'd be perfect.
Yeah. And there was some
do that.
And there were some complaints about the time and the date being too small, and at-a-glance would be ideal for that.
Yeah, the time is very annoying that it's gotten so much smaller.
Yeah, the behavior Google is encouraging car makers is to keep a manual clock, an analog clock on the dashboard or whatever.
What I do like is if you have a car with a wider screen, it actually puts a large clock off to the side that's always there.
Mm.
It's a kind of a little bit of waste of screen space because like the maps and stuff won't take up the whole screen when you do that, but it'll put the clock and your music on that screen at all times, which is kind of nice.
I'm surprised to hear that, because weren't they testing? I thought there was something on Reddit we saw earlier this year. They were testing an Android Auto actually using the full screen width, like having a wide screen option.
Yes, it was kind of like this, where you had the normal amount of space that you would use, but then the extra space from the wider screen was either a music widget, the time, or your mapping directions, but they took off the mapping directions with the update, which is strange.
So
it's a good update, but it's a mixed bag. Depends on how you were using it before.
Okay, this is the first version of this new design. Compared to the final iteration of Android, of the old Android Auto, which would you rather be using?
I think if it weren't for the app switchers in the old Android Auto, I would say the old Android Auto. Mm. But I think the biggest thing that this update fixes is just overall navigation of the UI, including getting to apps. Because previously, like, let's say you were a Spotify user, but you were trying out YouTube Music. Mm-hmm. If you wanted to switch between the two, you had to go over to the Music tab, which defaulted to Spotify, and then you'd have to click on the Music tab again, and then scroll down to find YouTube Music, and then click YouTube Music. On the new one, you just hit the home button, and then you find YouTube Music.
And it kind of ignores the fact that people switch between audio, between music and podcasts all the time.
Yes, they do, and in some cases, mapping, too. And a lot of people switch between Google Maps and Waze.
Yes, Waze. So, that's Android Auto. I guess larger screens going forward would help, like physically larger screens in the car would help.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, I could definitely not use this new update on my older car because the touchscreen was a 6.5 inch screen and the new one's like 8 inches or something. I don't think I could use this update on anything smaller than what I have.
Ooh, that's
not good to hear.
And at least most people because, have,
which I actually never thought about that, but the because the time and your LTE information and stuff would be incredibly small.
Yeah. So we've seen what is the Android Automotive, the minor distinction.
Mm-hmm.
Does Android Automotive fit into this the latest redesign of the regular car phone based experience, or do you still? I'm curious when they designed Automotive and when they designed this redesign. Is it taking what's new in Android Automotive and bringing it to more people, or is it does Automotive always feel like a separate thing in itself?
Yeah, Automotive is kind of a distinctly different setup just because the car makers can do whatever they want with it, pretty much. It's kind of like Android TV. You have the consumer experience and they have the operator tier.
Mm.
And, you know, operator tier is like you get stuff like with Dish and TiVo are doing, where it's nothing like what Google's providing. I think they probably got some cues from Automotive for this new auto design with the darker theme and the app drawer and all that, but they're still pretty distinctively different.
Mm. So speaking of Android TV, we had a bit of a series of Android news events this week. I guess starting off is the fact that the NVIDIA Shield TV is getting Android Pie as we speak. It's rolling out with the upgrade 8.0 experience.
Yep, and it actually is rolling out to the 2017 model and the 2015 model. And the 2015 model, that means it is the fourth major upgrade it's ever got.
That is a killer. That's such a long update period. Such a long official update period, mind you.
Yeah, no, it's because it started off on Lollipop.
And wow.
It's largely just because internally, those two devices are basically identical.
Yeah.
The only real difference between them is the type of storage and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, but it's still the Tegra processor.
Yep.
And the next device is just the revised chipset. What do you want from that new device from a Gen 3.0 technically?
So I've been using the 2017 Shield since it launched. I absolutely love everything about it, except for the remote, which is absolute crap.
Yes,
is the worst remote I think you could possibly imagine, because the buttons are shallow and tiny. There's only a D-pad, a home button, and a back button, and the volume slider is a capacitive touch sensor.
Yeah, in the middle, that it's your. Mm-hmm. It looks cool.
It does look very cool, but it's also very thin and tiny, which makes it uncomfortable to hold.
Yeah.
And it has serious connection issues to where it will... I think when it was at its worst, I think I timed it one time, and from pressing the home button to it reacting on screen was almost a full minute.
So I got the Shield TV late last year, and all those issues seemed to be resolved, but I... most of the time just use the Android app, the Android TV remote app for that.
Yeah, they have significantly improved the remote, but it still has issues from time to time, especially if you have multiple things connected to your TV and just around it. I actually wrote something earlier this year. I found some USB replacements that are so much better. The main problem with the Shield remote was the Google Assistant experience because of the connection and how slow it was, you would say something and it wouldn't recognize it. Like it would time out before it processed what you said. So honestly, if they can just take the current Shield, and, you know, update the chipset and then fix the remote and maybe make it a little bit cheaper, they've got a winner. But the interesting thing is with those FCC listings that, leaked out is that there was another listing which was an update to the 2017 Shield that had the new processor. And the drawings in the two FCC listings kind of make it seem like the new shield isn't going to just be the current form factor, but it might be either a much smaller set-top box or a dongle.
Okay, so the dongle is got to be something. But how are they processing the handling the hard drive? It still has a hard drive in it.
Nope. The 2017 has an SS. If it's one of the 16 gig models, it is a. I can't remember if it's an actual SSD or if it's a flash storage, but either probably way, flash,
yeah. But it's just a 500 gigabyte hard drive, which is the same body. There's no.
No, the 2017, the 16 gig is like the size of an actual SSD, and the 500 gig is like twice the size.
The body is different? The actual casing is different?
The design is identical, but the size is physically, it's almost twice the size.
My one complaint.
Weird.
My one complaint was it's always too small. It's not a stable box. It moves around. Like even compared to the Apple TV, it has no heft.
Yeah, it does. It does have no heft. That would be nice.
Yeah,
dongle's not going to fix that.
It is,
but a dongle might fix the big problem that everyone has, which is that the shield is $200.
Yes. Yeah.
If they release a dongle and say this is $100, I think they'll have a massive winner.
But at the same time, that cannibalizes the Chromecast so hard because the biggest complaint of the Chromecast being there's no home screen, there's no UI.
I don't think that's NVIDIA's problem.
Yes, that's true.
But no, I think that'd be a winner, and I think it would encourage Google to finally say, hey, this is our platform, let's make something for it.
Yes, make something for it.
Player 2.0.
Pixel Player. I've been saying this for 2 years.
As long as it's shaped as a Nexus Q, I don't care.
I'm honestly fine. I would love that. That would be fantastic.
I am still looking for a Nexus Q in the box, so somebody reach out to me. But neither here nor there. Software experience. Android 9 Pi for Android TV honestly seems like it's a more under the hood kind of thing in terms of what apps can do now. But the only major change that NVIDIA cited was the fact that you could have the settings were somewhat tweaked.
Yeah, no, Android Pi is not a major overhaul to Android TV like Oreo was. But it's still got all the improvements that Android Pi has on your phone. One thing I saw someone tweet about earlier, I haven't actually checked it myself, is that apparently they changed the volume slider to match what's on your phone. So instead of being a transparent bar at the top of the screen, it's that pill-shaped thing on the side of the screen.
That's a worthy touch.
It's a very strange choice.
It sounds vaguely like most other TV volume controls.
Most of them, though, aren't on the side of the screen. Most of them are either like on the bottom or on the top. Or maybe I just haven't used other TVs in a long time.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Maybe NVIDIA didn't really want to tweak Android 9 Pi too much.
Maybe not, but that's a platform level change if it's anything, because NVIDIA didn't. NVIDIA was just using Google's implementation.
Yeah,
but it's an interesting change because, like, I think of Roku where it's a very small bar. I don't know how Apple TV does it. But I always liked the way Android TV did it because it did not get in the way of your content at all.
Yeah, and rounding out what happened this week, the Galaxy Fold is launching this September. I wonder where you can buy it in the U.S. if with T-Mobile saying they won't be selling it.
That's not a good sign for AT&T.
AT&T, yeah. But it's, yeah, Google has been making a deal about Android foldables coming to market, and how badly would that hurt morale if it's actually very hard to buy the first one of these things?
Well, that's, I feel like that's Huawei's problem more than Samsung's.
And the other bit of Samsung news is a tablet, a $649 Samsung Galaxy Tab S6 with a Snapdragon 855, which, that is impressive. It's expensive, but at least it's a new processor.
Mm-hmm. You know, and like I was on a call with Samsung last week talking about this thing, and who knows if they're making any of the numbers exaggerating anything, but they say that their tablets are selling. Like, at least the high-end ones are.
Oh, really? The high-end ones?
Yeah, that's what they were saying. So, I don't know what to think of it, but apparently they're seeing some level of success. I would think, honestly, just because they're the only ones still doing it.
Yeah, but who is invested enough in the Android tablet ecosystem?
Yeah.
I think it's the only thing Samsung really has to offer, which is honestly a really clever idea, is the whole DeX setup. Because when you dock their tablets onto their keyboard, it throws you into DeX, which is, I mean, iPadOS is really cool, but it's not that.
No.
Now, counterpoint. I feel like for the same price, you could get a nice Chrome OS tablet that can do all of the same things that this Samsung Tab S6 can do and more.
Except what tablet are you going to get?
I guess Pixel Slate, but I feel like there needs to be a good, like, when Snapdragon gets into the Chrome OS game, finally, that's when we're going to start seeing good consumer-friendly Chrome OS tablets.
I hope so, but I mean, yeah. Pixel Slate wise, you're talking about $150 more.
$799 versus $649.
I'll take that for usability and consistency, because DeX isn't that cool by comparison to Chrome OS anyway.
And you're paying the extra $150 for 5 years of updates, basically.
Mm. You're also paying $200 for the keyboard. Samsung's is $180. Samsung's is gonna get attention just because it's cheaper, but also because it's a better tablet. It's also not a 12-inch tablet. It's 10.5.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Okay. So the $180 Samsung tablet keyboard. It's
be still my heart.
Are these expensive to make? Because that seems to be the trend. These are over $100 keyboards, even third parties made by Bridge, Apple, Samsung's now, Google's. I never realized these were actually that expensive to make. What is happening in them?
I didn't either, but I'll give Samsung credit for theirs because, one, it has a better kickstand, and two, it has a touchpad, both of which the iPad one does not have.
Touchpad. How is Android on the touchpad with the touchpad?
With the mouse, it feels like a Chromebook. Yes, Android has full support for a mouse. I did briefly do that with the back in the Nexus 7 days when I was in high school.
And I used
a Bluetooth keyboard and a Bluetooth mouse.
What OS did you run? Did you just use Android?
Yeah, that was back in KitKat, too.
Oh, that's old man right there. Yeah, so that is the show for this week. Perfect hour. It's been a long one. So thank you to Ben and Kyle for joining us. We record this podcast every Wednesday or Thursday for the summer, and you can find it the day after on all your favorite podcasting platforms like iTunes and Apple Podcasts, Pocket Cast, Google Podcasts, Google Play Music for now. And you can listen on our site at 9to5 Google at any time. Thank you for tuning in, and see you all next week.
See ya.
Bye.
Bye.